And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Yeah. Goes from like Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I mean all the way down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the border from there into Fort Benning. We now call it Fort Benning, Georgia. And then big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we got plenty on tap for you. We're going to jump right on in. And by the way, a couple of y'all are still saying things like, where did the YouTube go? But sometimes our texter tells us things that people said way after the fact. So I think that's an old text. Mark from Red Bay, I believe, was asking about it.
Yeah, the YouTube is up and running per normal now. So if you want to check it out.
And we're also streaming, by the way, on a variety of platforms. You can find us on Facebook at Sin Phil Williams. That's my account. You can find us on X on my personal account at Sin Phil Williams again. Or the Right Side Media account. You can find us on our website at rightsidemedia.org. You can find us on Rumble. You can find us on YouTube. Good Lord, we're everywhere. All I'm saying is tune in. In fact, I tell you what, if you're not watching the video, you might want to here in a minute because I'm about to show you some pictures of the things I talked about in my monologue. I find them fascinating. It's like history. I'll just go ahead and jump in on that. I'll tell you what, I got some text messages. I'll tell you what, let me do this. Let me get some text messages, and then I'll jump in on that. So give you guys time to get to the video stream if you want to. Go to the video stream. I'm going to show you pictures of the Chilkoot Pass, the Golden Staircase, and of the A.J. Goddard steamship or steamboat that was carried up the mountain. So let me do this first. Bruce from Springville says, the battle cry for our private sector needs to be, quote, push the envelope. We'll be second to none. I agree with that. We had actually had a sermon at church this past weekend. I go to Church of the Highlands, and the pastor's sermon was about how much more God intends. It was not a like get rich kind of sermon. It wasn't like that at all. He was talking about the blessings of the Lord do not stop, and that one of his lines was, "If we don't quit, we win." It's a great line. He said, "I can hear my football coach yelling at me," but that's what God says. So hang on it. JT Lacey Springs says, overreach seems to continue to expand. Example, the $150 charge to hand me my vehicle tag. Yes, totally get it. Totally. Here's the other. The real ID is still bugging the crap out of me. Just saying. I'm still there.
Yeah.
I know. I'm still there.
I mean, it is quite annoying.
It is quite annoying. I mean,
although I had it on mine when I got it, I would be annoyed if I had to go redo it just for that.
I don't know. Something about the fact that I feel like I've proven myself to my government multiple times, and now I got to prove myself again to be allowed to travel inside my own country. Ticks me off. John from Huntsville says, Phil, fantastic monologue. Also, did you hear that Putin announced a 3-day ceasefire in Ukraine starting on May the 8th? By the way, JP, I know you will never say war eagle, but can you give me a war beagle? Just asking.
Not really. I mean, it's too close.
Dave from Capshaw sending us something. What's he got here? Oh, Babylon Bee has a headline. Joe Biden arrested for harboring 11 million illegal aliens. I did see that earlier. Babylon Bee, who writes their stuff, man? It's priceless. TC from Priceville says, I think the reason the left does not care about the private sector or small businesses is because they don't need them. They figured out a long time ago they can just use the Federal Reserve to print all the money they want, and they can care less that the American taxpayers are on the hook to pay for it. Just my 2 cents. Well, I don't think you're too far off on some of them, TC. Now, of course, that doesn't negate the fact that one of the mantras you constantly hear is they need to pay their fair share, but they'll never say what fair is. It's just more. Fair is just more, please, more. And then David from Huntsville says the left is often seen as being the more compassionate, but statistically, conservatives give more charity than those on the left. That's true, by the way. Said conservatives also volunteer more, but it's not because the people on the left don't care as much. It's because a person on the left sees these things as primarily government's role to do. Perfectly said. He said, a person on the right believes it's in the individual, the neighbor, the church, the charities, or the community's responsibility to do things. Government is the least efficient way to provide help. Wow, you guys, I'm telling you, half this audience could just host this show for me. I swear, it's just true. Now, look, I'm going to run through, so Dipper number one, and JP, I'll be calling up those photographs here momentarily. If you're watching on the live stream, I'm about to show you a couple of things that to me are just inspiring. And they're old, old, old photographs from 1898. But listen, there are times when government needs to quit sending business elsewhere and making it hard to be in business. There's times when government needs to realize that they can actually level a playing field as opposed to create the playing field. There's times when government doesn't even do its own job, which makes it hard for people to be in business. There's times when government forces an agenda to try to co-opt the market forces and get the agenda in front of the actual private sector. And then there's times when government overregulates to the point that the private sector is crushed or feels no need to be in business anymore. I'll talk about all those things in a minute, but let me do this. If you heard my monologue a moment ago, I talked about the gold rush of 1896 through 98-ish in Alaska. And y'all, when I say the Chilkoot Pass was rough, I didn't have the time to do it justice in my monologue. But the Chilkoot Trail was anywhere between 28 and 30 miles on the average, and it was arduous, and it was so rough in some places that they just basically they stopped taking pack mules because in the end, the animals were often destroyed. They'd break their legs, and things would happen to them. They wind up getting eaten. So they just decided to, basically it became a man's job to carry his gear or to pay somebody to pack it for him. There was no other way to do it. You couldn't drag it. You couldn't put it in a wagon. You couldn't haul it on mules. And then you get, after all of this, and there were stages, like you'd go to this certain place, and you'd have a resting spot. And then there are stages after that, and you go to another place, and a resting spot. And we're talking about not just like it's your turn on the trail, you might see somebody. We're talking about a line of people. It looks like, if you look at the pictures I'll show you in a minute, it looks like literally people going up an escalator at a department store. There's so many. And we're talking about 1,500 steps finally were cut by some entrepreneur into the side of what became known as the Chilkoot Pass. And the Chilkoot Pass, at some places, was at a 45-degree angle. And it went up for almost a mile. It raised, I want to say, like 2,500 feet during that mile. It was epic. And there were people whose entire effort to get to the gold fields failed right there on the Chilkoot Pass. But then they get to the top. And then they're in the high mountains. And the Yukon River is in the high mountains, and the Yukon River was what they had to sail to get down to Dawson, which were closer to Dawson where the actual gold fields were. And some entrepreneur, a guy named Goddard from Seattle, thought, you know what? I'll fix this. And he had two small steamboats made, the kind that had the stern wheel, the big paddle wheel on the back. And these weren't big. They're like the size, I want to say they were about 20 feet long when they were built, and roughly about 10 feet wide. And they could haul like 10 men plus their gear. But he had the boats built, boilers and all, and then disassembled, and then shipped up to Skagway Port in Alaska, and then hauled bit by bit, board by board, boiler by boiler, up through the mountain passes, and then put them back together up on the high mountain lakes. And it worked. This entrepreneurship didn't just make those people a lot of money cutting steps or building boats. This entrepreneurship was literally what made the gold fields more efficient and, for that matter, safer. You got these pictures? Let's do this. Let's do the Golden Staircase picture first. If you're watching the YouTube right now, I'm putting a picture up on the screen. And when it comes up, I'll just tell you what you're seeing is, and I got a slight delay on the one that I'm watching on my screen, but when you see the picture, what you're looking at is a long line of men that if you saw the entire picture, what you would probably see is literally hundreds, maybe 1,000 men going just, back to back to back up the mountain pass. Is that picture up yet? I can't even see it on my screen yet, so I'm just talking to it. This picture, there it is. This picture, yeah, that one, okay, you got the right one. That's a great picture there. That's probably 1,000 men walking one after the other up the Golden Staircase through the Chilkoot Pass. And you can see how steep it gets there at the end. You see that thing, man? Can you imagine? There were times it says that when the snow melted, that the people were actually having to go up the hill on their hands and knees because it was so steep. Unbelievable. And they're carrying, every time they went, they were carrying packs of 80 to 100 pounds or more. And then sometimes they paid these like Sherpa guides, but they were Native Americans in the area to carry for them. But you had to have the money to do that. And you would get up there, and the Canadian government had a mandate, which was a good mandate, that every man had to have at least 1,500 pounds of gear. And so what that meant was you were going to make this trip 15 times on the average, just to get your gear up. And they had a place up there called the scales where they would weigh it, and they would see what you were bringing. And then they would tell you that you did or did not have enough, and you would have a place where you could stow your gear until you got it all together, and then you had to find a way to get it forward from there. So there's the golden staircase. How crazy is that? And then show the next picture. The next picture is going to come up on the screen. This is, so A.B. Goddard.
Just one second, let me pull it up real quick.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking. Just, go do your thing, man. A guy named A.B. Goddard from Seattle. I'm fascinated by history, but this is a great story, too. It's entrepreneurship. It's private sector work at its best. A.B. Goddard was an entrepreneur in Seattle who heard about the gold rush. And his thought was not, hey, let me go get some gold. His thought was, I'm going to make a lot of money by helping the other people get gold. And so he took these two boats, he had them built and he took them apart and literally packed them up into the mountains and put them back together. Y'all, that's on top of the 1,500 pounds he had to have to get up there. There it is. He named his first boat after himself. It's the A.B. Goddard. And you can see a picture of it on the screen right now. And the A.B. Goddard plied those waters. And listen, when it went up and down the rivers, sometimes it was calm water. Sometimes they had to shoot rapids. Other times it was going around shoals and sandbars and dodging ice flows. And it actually sank. The A.B. Goddard and its sister ship both sailed the waters for 2 to 3 years. The gold rush only lasted about 2 years. And when the A.B. Goddard sank in 1901, it was found in 2008. They actually found it with a lot of historical artifacts still on it. The boiler still intact underwater. And it became an archaeological spot as they pulled it up. That's 1898 right there. Can you imagine what it took to carry that thing up the mountain? I mean, in pieces, but still.
That is true entrepreneurship right there, though, it's crazy. Like you said.
It's crazy. That's America right there, man. I'm just telling you. That's America. All right. Listen, we're taking a break right now. We're going to come back. And in that theme, I'm going to dive right into private sector versus public sector. Yeah, I got a few more things to tell you. Things in the news. Things you're going to want to know about this very thing. What happens when government just gets out of the way, please? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like... Man, making common sense like a superpower. Chris from Gadsden checking in. He says, that golden staircase is really just a picture of my grandparents walking to school.
Sounds like the stories they say.
Perfect. Except that it'll be uphill both ways.
Yes, yeah. Nothing but uphill.
Andrew from Tony, Alabama says, I believe the man-made staircase you're talking about was depicted in the beginning of a few scenes of the movie White Fang from the 90s. It may have been. Yeah, it may sure enough have been. John from Huntsville says, awesome picture, Phil. Thank you, John. And he says, the Right Side Radio History Channel is awesome. Proud to serve. Tony from Franklin, Tennessee says, that's amazing. Just found your live stream. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate you. And thank you for being a part of the show. We're glad you're with us. Roy from Hartsville says, information on boat. What is he saying there? I don't understand what's happening. He's hitting me like a whole lot of emojis, and he says boat.
I guess he means the information was great.
Thanks. Ken from Harvest says, an example of government getting out of the way, cell phones. President Reagan deregulated the phone companies, paving the way for cell phones. You know what? Thank you, Ken. I've actually used this as an example before. Let's talk about this. The idea of government inflicting itself on a market with an agenda is a whole lot different than the government lifting itself out of the way so that the free market can do its thing. Point in fact is the electric vehicles. All right, so electric vehicles, do they work? Yeah. Electric vehicles, are they considered a part of the market now? Sure, they already were. Electric vehicles, are they what everybody wants? Nope. Are they as efficient? No, depending on what you mean by efficient. Electric vehicles, are there charging station infrastructures, you know, everywhere for them? No. Okay, here's the deal. The Biden administration did not understand the free market. The Biden administration thought it could force itself on the free market and thereby, using an agenda, climate change, decide that everybody needed to have a certain kind of vehicle. What if they had done that with cell phones back in the day? Wouldn't have worked, would it? What happened with cell phones was President Reagan deregulated the phone companies. Perfect point, Ken from Harvest. He deregulated the phone companies, but everybody didn't get a cell phone the next day. And certainly everybody didn't have a smartphone yet. Part of that was technology, but part of it was also the technology had not been developed. The better mousetrap had not yet been built. The market forces began to dictate advances in the technology. As supply and demand began to meet, then supply became the next level, and the demand wanted an even greater level. And so people went from having a cell phone that had been deregulated that you carried around in a bag and you had to have a special antenna put on the back of your vehicle and you had to plug it in and then take it in your house so nobody would steal it. Well, then it went from that to this thing that you carried around and it was about the size of a brick, but it was still kind of clunky and you only had certain places in the world you can even use it. And then it went from there to this thing you had that you could flip open, even carry in your pocket, but you sort of had, a certain amount of data. If you remember this, people didn't want to make too many phone calls because you might use up your minutes. Remember that? And then it got to the point that coverage was pretty blanket, and then you began to do more. And the next thing you know, it went to like having a BlackBerry where you had a little screen you could type on. Holy cow, what is this? I can get emails on my phone. And then pretty soon they had the internet on your phone. And next thing you know, people are texting more than they're talking. And then after that, you got, wait, I can put the whole internet and do my social media and everything on my phone? Can you imagine not having a smartphone now? No. Did you get there overnight? No. But the government got out of the way and the private sector built what the public wanted. And they built it over time. The Biden administration did just the opposite. The Biden administration says, here's our plan. You're going to have an EV and you're going to like it. And then they mandated the construction of EVs through regulatory burdens and tax incentives and subsidies. And they tried to spend your tax dollars to build maybe a few electric chargers. And the market was never ready for this. It wasn't, because that's not the way the market works. When government decides to take its agenda and falsify the market will always self-correct. And if you look right now, there are entire car lots full of EVs that have not yet sold. There are companies that had been gearing up under the Biden administration because they were told they had to, that are now backing off because they don't have to anymore. You know why? Because they know they won't sell them. Why build them if you're not going to get subsidized? Why build them if you're not going to get subsidized and nobody will buy them? And oh, by the way, why build them if no one's going to buy them? And it also costs a lot more to build them. And Ford is losing money every time it builds an EV. Now, is there a way forward? Yeah. But you know what? We're just not quite there yet. So in the meantime, you just don't turn off the tap on combustion engines and pretend that oil and gas is no longer relevant. You can continue building the EV if you want to, and the world will wind up adopting your product when it is the best one, and that's what the free market wants. I just gave you literally between the smartphone and the EV, I just gave you Free Market 101. We're going to come back, and I got a few stories I'm going to tell you about things in the news right now that detail the private sector versus the public sector as examples. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, hour number 2, coming up. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number 2. Hour number 2 on a Meatloaf Monday. Blessings upon your meatloaf dinners. All right, let me go to the phones real quick before I jump back into my topics. Chris from Athens on line 1. Hey, man, how are you?
Colonel Williams, love the show.
Thanks,
hey, just real quick to your topic about the EV vehicles.
Yeah.
Aside from the issues they currently have,
yeah,
they're not good in cold weather environments. Batteries don't charge for the flip, yeah, and
never
at least around here and possibly other cities, you also don't have the adequate amount of chargers to charge EVs. So that also, in my opinion, is a hit to that market as well. And internal combustions have been around forever, and that's still the best,
yeah,
the best vehicle to.
I agree, man.
Right now.
You know, they have a thing now. It's actually diagnosable. It's called range anxiety, too. People get worried about taking a trip and not being able to keep their charge long enough to make the whole trip, the range they can go. And then You look at, we had, what, $7.5 billion assigned to Pete Buttigieg to build infrastructure around the nation, and we got like a dozen charging stations, and that's about it.
Well, I know I work, who I work for, we have some at work. I know there's at Walmart, and I had a friend of mine I used to work with that when he bought his Tesla, he got a large tax credit. But why get a huge tax credit if you can't? If you have to basically charge it at your house.
That's exactly right. Hey, good call, man. Thanks for hanging on the line. I appreciate you waiting during the break.
All right, I appreciate it. You have a good one.
You too, man. Thank you. Yeah, good call. And he's right. It's just the market wasn't ready. Let's just be honest. And they can't force it to be ready overnight. But let's talk about some other things within this whole public sector versus private sector thing. I got several examples for you to think about. Like, here's one. What about when government stops deciding, you know, our foreign policy would be better if we took some of these American jobs and we sent them overseas? Now, some of y'all sat up straight in your chair because you're like, yes! And others of you are thinking, yeah, but labor unions are going to make it cost more money. You know what I think will wind up happening? If more and more of our industrial base recenters itself back onto U.S. soil, I really do believe that at some point the labor unions will recognize that if they're not careful, it'll get sent offshore again if they keep trying to drive wages through the roof. But here's the bottom line. We want the jobs for Americans first anyway. American family businesses back Trump's tariff boost to domestic manufacturing. This is off the National Pulse. This is what happens. Here's first example. When government quits sending its business offshore. A guy named Will Walker of a company called Walker Forge, they're a longtime family-owned business, and I think they're in Wisconsin. Yeah, they are. Says the tariffs are sending a clear message that companies cannot undercut our U.S. industrial base anymore. By the way, he's not union. He's management. He's the owner of the company. He's saying that. And you've got other companies. Like in the same article, you've got one called Franchino Mold and Engineering, another one called Elwood. You've got a whole bunch of companies out there that are saying, we are so glad that people are finding their way back to the United States. Now, you may say, well, are we really? Well, here's an example. It's not always just the American manufacturers. Sometimes it's foreign manufacturers going, if our biggest market is going to be America, maybe we ought to build in America. So LifeSet, Dateline 2 days ago, LifeSet came out with an article that says, telecom giant weighs expanding its U.S. manufacturing in light of Donald Trump's tariffs. All right, this is Nokia. Nokia, which is a Finnish, I thought Nokia was Japanese.
I kind of thought that too.
I never knew they were from Finland. I'm not sure why I would have known that, but nonetheless, I am somewhat taken aback.
I am too, actually.
Okay, a Finnish company, Nokia, announced it's considering expanding its U.S.-based manufacturing operations as a way to mitigate the effects of tariffs imposed by President Donald Trump. The company projects that tariffs will impact its second quarter comparable operating profit by about $22 to $34 million. Okay. And their shares fell by 6% based on those projections. So what they're thinking about doing is relocating their manufacturing capability to increase capabilities at their six American-based plants. Win-win. We get more Nokia products. They get the ability to build locally and probably save on some shipping. At the same time, American jobs. Yeah. So, yes, when government quits sending business offshore, we may actually win. How about this? What about when government doesn't do its job at all? I don't know if you heard Adam Schiff actually come clean. Oh, Lord. I can't believe I just said that. Anyway, Adam Schiff told a story the other day in an interview that I would say this. He's been holding on to the story for a while because it was not a new story. In other words, it didn't fit the narrative until he was running for the U.S. Senate. But Adam Schiff told the story about how he had his car broken into when he was traveling to San Francisco. His luggage was stolen out of his car. Crime in San Francisco is through the roof, right? So he went to a Target to get some toiletries and things he needed for his hotel stay. And when he was there, he realized everything he needed was locked up behind plexiglass. And he had to ask for help, which was hard to find because no one was around the store, to come and help him get the stuff he needed out of the locked cases. When he finally got the stuff, he went to the counter and the lady said, well, do you want one of our cloth bags? And he said, yes, I do, because that's going to be my luggage now. And she said, yeah, those Democrats are blankety blankety blank. Here's Adam Schiff telling a story about what happened to him in San Francisco, and the store operator, the clerk at the store, was not enamored of Democrats not realizing who he was. Lots of fun in that story, to be honest. But what?
I was going to say, it's funny when the people who are responsible for the mess that they make have to actually go endure the mess that they made.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they're like, oh, well, this is awful.
Which was his point in telling it.
Yeah.
He said, we've got to make a change. Oh, where were you last year during the campaign season, Adam Schiff? You were too busy saying you had seen the evidence and it was real. Russia collusion was a thing. Well, as living proof of what Adam Schiff is telling us now, Saks Fifth Avenue, story here on Fox Business. Saks Fifth Avenue is shutting down its San Francisco location. This is one of their anchor stores, y'all. This is a longtime brick-and-mortar icon in downtown San Francisco. It's been there for 45 years. It's not closing because Amazon online sales got so big that they got run out of the brick-and-mortar business. Not at all. It's closing because they can no longer guarantee the safety of their employees. They're tired of being robbed, and they don't see any point. It got to the point that they had already tried doing, you can shop at Saks Fifth Avenue by appointment only. Can you imagine? You got to call Saks and say, I'd like to come at 10 a.m., and, sir, what department do you want to go to? Men's? Well, sir, you'll have to be escorted. I mean, they were doing appointment only, and they've decided it's not even worth it. So they're shutting down and abandoning their downtown location in San Francisco. Bloomingdale's is closing in the same general area later this spring. You've got Walgreens, Denny's, and Michael Kors have already shuttered their San Francisco locations. So far in 2025, San Francisco police have recorded more than 8,100 crime reports, including 530 robberies and 4,600 instances of larceny theft. So the end result is, if government will stop sending business offshore, we might get more jobs. If government will do its job, like, I don't know, enforce crime, you might actually preserve business. I've already talked ad nauseum about what happens when government forces its agenda, but I had a whole article on that, EV chargers, I've already got it. But then there's this. Then there's hyper-regulation. Then there's government that decides it knows best and it's going to hyper-regulate to the point that businesses go, screw this, and I'm out of here. And that's happening. And sometimes it's, you know, massive OSHA regulations or licensing requirements or, you know, fees and fines. And other times, it's just literally big government going, because we're the government, that's why. Like, how about this? Camping World. I love this guy, Marcus Lemonis, who is the owner of Camping World. He's an immigrant. His family came here from Beirut, Lebanon, when he was a kid. And he has been living, in his own words, he's been living the American dream. He loves this country, and every single Camping World facility, and there's 200 of them around the nation, they sell RVs. They fly a giant American flag. It's the flag itself is the size of a basketball court. That's how big it is. Can you imagine? Size of a basketball court.
That's pretty massive.
On a 130-foot tall pole. And that's as sure as they do anything else on their designs for their facilities, they always have that 130-foot pole and their 3,200-square-foot American flag. And Greenville, North Carolina said, that flag is too big. We want it taken down. And he said, it's not going to happen. They started hitting him with $15,000 a day fines. $15,000 a day fines.
Over a flag.
Over a flag. Which, by the way, is, it's the flag of our nation. Yes, it's also just looks cool. And next thing is, how many people want to buy an RV and also would go to the place that stands for America? They won't do it. The Greenville city officials finally said, no, we're not, you change that flag, you take that flag down. And he finally said, you know what, screw you. And he shut the whole place down and left. Just shut it down and left. A place where he had obviously assessed was worthy of one of his outlets. He finally decided, I ain't doing it anymore. I'm not fighting your hyper-regulation. So yes, here's the other example. If government will get out of the way with over-regulation, then, oh, by the way, you might keep some businesses.
Well, good on him for doing that.
Yeah, I take some brass.
Also, I will say, you know, you're talking earlier about Adam Schiff and realizing how unsafe San Francisco is.
Yeah.
But it's funny, though, because how easy it could be fixed. We saw Newsom clean up the streets when Xi Jinping came to town. So
that's right.
If they had the same, you know, get to itness of, you know, there's a foreign dictator coming, and what if they had that much care about their own citizens and constituents to clean up the streets and make it safer?
Yeah.
But how fastly it got done shows how easy it is to fix. They just don't want to.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, listen, that's it for that one. Private sector versus public sector. That actually took longer than I thought it would, but I think it's because I had to just talk about the Chilkoot Pass for a while.
I mean, that was a pretty cool story.
That was history. All right, we're taking a break. We're coming right back. Next one, oh, you're going to want to hear this, you guys. Roundup. Have you seen the stories of what happened in Florida, in Colorado? And I think there's more coming. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.